Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Blog Talk Radio. I'm Sharon Ann Wyckoff, and here with the program Voice of Change, Raising Our Children, Our Future. Tonight is my delight to have Karen Melton back with me, and the topic will be how to avoid a cesarean in your hospital birth. The Voice of Change, Raising Our Children, Our Future, will be the weekly focus for our programming in the future. Periodically, I will have specials, and those will be entitled The Voice of Change, Healing Our Planet. On the weekly programs, we're going to be talking about nurturing our precious children in mind, body, and spirit, allowing their unique individual souls to soar. These shows will also focus on nurturing the teachers of these children, the parents, the caregivers, the teachers, and all who are involved with these children. These certainly are changing times. We're being asked to live in greater harmony with ourselves, our children, and also with the planet. And although there is much chaos taking place on the planet presently and in the lives of many, the potential for goodness, for healing and wholeness has never been greater. This is the time to be open to new ideas, healing ways, and change. And tonight is one of those transformational programs. Karen Melton has a prenatal and birth therapy practice focusing on the prevention and healing of prenatal, birth, and bonding trauma with babies, adults, kids, and parents. She is a mature, experienced practitioner offering gentle somatic and regulatory healing work. Karen's initial and most important training in prenatal and perinatal psychology and health was in the womb. There she learned about how profoundly and how deeply our lives are affected by our journey into life, from conception onward. She trained extensively with Dr. William Emerson and Dr. Ray Castellino when she moved here to California from England 13 years ago. And prior to that, she practiced as a counselor and therapist in England for 15 years. Karen is an amazing person, and it has just been my delight to work with her and to know her. Many years ago, I heard the statement that the way you are birthed is the way you live your life. And basically, the last 8 years, I have been exploring that and found it so true. Karen, it's delightful to have you with us again tonight.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
Thanks for having me again.
Oh, it's such an honor to talk with you. I just think the work that you do is so very important. It just it changes lives, and to let people know about the possibilities of traumas before they occur so they can be prevented is just so important. So
I'm so
glad we're doing this program tonight.
Me too. It's very important to me too.
It truly is. And toward the end of last year, we did another show, and that was the
trauma caused by C-section.
Yes, thank you. The trauma, hidden effects of the cesarean section. And so I think, you know, as we go into this tonight, the importance of trying to avoid a cesarean section, it would be important perhaps just to recap that program a little bit so people will understand why the cesarean section wants to be avoided, if at all possible.
Yes, I will. Perhaps I'll do that first then.
Oh, that'll be wonderful.
Yeah. I just want to mention that actually that program is available on my website, on my homepage in its entirety, for people that might want to listen to the whole hour. Here I can just do a really quick recap of some of the things we went through in that hour.
Exactly. And your website, just to let people know, it's
healyourearlyimprints.com.
Yes, excellent. Yeah. I'll mention that another time too.
Yeah. Thank you. So I'll just do a little recap of that, and then
please,
we can talk a little bit more about how to avoid these traumas. Basically, just to say that there are, a couple of different kinds of C-sections. there's a small percentage of people who have cesarean sections where they're actually really needed and they really do save lives. Mm-hmm. And that's fantastic that we can have that there available for us when we really need it. There's a smaller group of people who have elective cesarean sections, and that's really when somebody's chosen to have a cesarean section when there's no medical reason why they should be having one. Mm-hmm. And then the largest area of C-section is what's often in the hospital called either an emergency or failure to progress C-section. Mm. And so in my practice, I work with children who've been born this way and mums who've given birth this way, and I see a lot of the effects of this kind of medicalized birthing. And so when babies and children come in, they often have issues with tactile sensitivity, which is not liking being touched or just having certain kinds of touch or certain parts of their body that they don't want you to touch. And that can include also being lifted in certain ways and certain positions and postures and that kind of thing. They have bonding issues. Often eating and feeding issues, which often do come from the intubation that happens immediately after a C-section, which is when they put a tube right down into their lungs to clean out all the fluids. They often have separation anxiety, difficulty with transitioning, sleeping trouble, and sometimes trauma crying, which is inconsolable, crying for long periods of time every day. And basically showing all the signs of trauma and stress held in the body. Because C-section it's a fast and stressful and very intense kind of birth. And then it's followed by the immediate risk of respiratory problems. So there's a lot going on in a C-section. And they can also have a very revved nervous system and be unable to really settle in their body just because everything happens so fast, and then they get that imprint in their nervous system.
Yes. It makes perfect sense, Karen, but I tell you, I thought I was pretty aware. I just never put two and two together that these could be possibilities from having a traumatic C-section, which ends up being traumatic to the prenate who has been, you know, still in the womb for so long, to have all this take place so rapidly. It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you know, and some babies have also been through maybe sometimes quite a long period of time having a difficult labor and getting stuck. And so they have to be, in a C-section, they have to be pulled out backwards from the birth canal. And that can be very aggressive.
Yes.
Yeah, that can be very traumatizing for them.
Mm.
So I'll just say a few things about how it can be traumatic for mums.
Sure.
Often women are just devastated that they didn't get to have the birth that they dreamed, and they feel disempowered. They also have to deal with the very physical reality of major abdominal surgery, which often leaves problems behind with digestion and vaginally, sexually, and in menstrual cycles, and just generally in how they're feeling in their pelvic area. In fact, I actually heard recently that in France, all women who have a baby, just normally, and certainly all women who have surgery, and of course in the case of C-section, we're talking about women who've had had a baby and surgery, they are routinely referred to a physical therapist that knows how to work with pelvic area issues.
Mm.
And I thought, well, that is just such a fantastic idea because it's so needed.
Yes.
Especially in these kind of surgical births. So a mom can feel very traumatized after her birthing experience, even demoralized, and often even not wishing to have another child because they're told by doctors that they have to go through a C-section again if they're going to have another baby, because mostly doctors don't like vaginal birth after cesarean. So, you know, they can get depressed, they can have bonding difficulties, and they can often feel as if something's missing, and that's because it is. Something is missing, and they didn't get to complete, and their body didn't get to complete, and then they had a lot of other things to deal with in between that. And then, of course, the bonding difficulties that can be caused by C-section, partly because mum and baby can be in shock, and that doesn't create the most optimal bonding situation.
Of course.
Yeah, and then because babies are taken away for longer periods of time when they've been born cesarean section, longer than when they're born vaginally in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to cope with that. Mum and baby have to cope with that separation. And then often now the dads are going off with the babies, and they tend to get, sometimes the babies get really bonded to the dad instead. And then that has to be sorted out later, because mums, you know, need to be the primary caregivers, and they need to be the ones doing that and doing the breastfeeding and everything. So it can cause some problems in that way too with the bonding.
Sure.
So that's just sort of a, you know, little rough recap there of a really huge subject.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yeah.
Just amazing what takes place during a C-section that is just so unwelcoming to that little infant and also to the mother. And again, as you say, sometimes they are necessary and that's important, but it's the ones that you're talking about that are just done for the reasons you're going to be talking about today that can be avoided, and that's what we want to address in this particular hour.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that probably about 5% of births could be really, really needed C-sections. I think the World Health Organization puts it at around 10, maybe 15%, depending on which area you live in. And I actually think even that's a little bit too high. In the United States, we're looking at a third of babies at the moment being born by C-section.
Approximately a third?
A third of all babies now are being born.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then again, that depends on where you live, because if you live in an area or you go to a hospital who has a 50% cesarean section rate, then obviously you have a 50% chance of having a cesarean section in that hospital.
So it really can vary hospital to hospital due to the practices that are taking place.
Very much so it can do, but the general national rate based on 2006 figures is about a third of women, and I'm sure it's gone up quite a lot since then because just of what I've seen happening in the hospitals. But, you know, basically, I mean, it's interesting that most women, I think it's even like 99% of women in the U.S., obviously feel safer having their babies in hospital, even though I have to say that research doesn't support that hospital birth is safer.
Yes.
And the thing about hospital is, interesting thing about hospitals and medical situations is that if you really think about that, what they really have to offer you is drugs and surgery.
Yes.
That's what medical people do. That's what they have in their tool bag, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we have just come to the point where many people, you know, give all their power over to the medical profession. And it just is, you know, I learned many years ago, it's just not the way to go.
Yes, it certainly does take some thinking about.
Yes, it does. Why do you think, Karen, there are so many C-sections happening in the United States today? Why do you think
that's
happening?
Well, you know, I think there are lots of reasons, and I can run through some of the main ones that I think are having a big influence on the high rate of C-sections. And then what I'd like to do is really focus in on a few of the ones that people can actually do something about.
Yes.
And that's what I'd really like to be finishing up with towards the end, is just really so people have something to take away around that and a different way of thinking about this.
Yes.
If they're going to have their baby in hospital. I can just, you know, name some of the things that I see that I think are creating this.
Yes, please do.
Okay. Well, one of the ones, and I think a really, really big one, is fear of litigation. Doctors are very frightened about litigation. And it's interesting, I was just reading a book recently that was saying that the difference between midwife-assisted births and hospital births when it comes to litigation is that usually it's the patient that actually takes the doctor who court and soothe them, whereas with midwives, it's also the doctors that take them to court and not their patients. Their patients don't actually come up against them. They're usually very happy with what they got.
And so the doctors take them to court?
Yeah, because there's been a long-standing persecution of midwives by the medical profession.
So true.
Yeah, it really has been. And so that's one of the ways that they continue that fight. So fear of litigation is really a huge reason. And one of the interesting things about that is that doctors are not sued for doing a C-section. So that's a big piece. And then another piece is really the insurance companies. I think the insurance companies pay more for C-sections. And they also discourage doctors very much from spending a lot of time with laboring women. So that's one of the reasons why laboring women don't get to give birth in their own time, because time equals money to both insurance companies and to doctors. So there's a very real practical element to this.
Yes.
Yeah. And, of course, the other practical element to this is doctors' convenience. You know, obstetricians actually orchestrate and make birthing decisions about you and your labor based on their schedule a lot of the time. And when you go into hospital, you need to know that you will be on their schedule. You won't be on your own schedule, and you certainly won't be on your baby's schedule.
Knowing this, Karen, is just so empowering because, you know, the knowledge really is powerful. So just hearing these things, I think it's just so important for women who are expecting to have this kind of background.
It's funny. There was a study done, and it showed that most hospital births are happening Monday to Friday between 9 and 5.
Oh, if it wasn't so sad, it would be. I mean, it's funny if it wasn't so sad.
Oh, well,
my gosh.
Yeah, it's so obvious when you look at it that way.
Yeah.
That's what's happening there, just being highly managed because basically, really, obstetricians do not want to be up at the night. They don't want to be sitting around for hours waiting for a woman to give birth.
Yes.
And they have this training that says we must use drugs and surgery. This is what we do because we're doctors. And so put those things together. And in actual fact, you know, in I think the United States and Canada and Brazil, urban Brazil mostly, they're the only countries that actually have highly trained surgeons attending birthing women, which is a very strange thing to be doing, really, if you think about it. And they are all the ones that have the highest C-section rates, not surprisingly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's not a big shock when you look at it that way, is it?
Oh,
it would be that it would be the highest places for it.
Mm-hmm.
So another part of what happens in a hospital as opposed to, you know, a home birth or a birthing center is that there's a real absence of continuity of care. And one of the ways that they manage that in hospital is by using electric fetal monitoring, EFM, which is really a very poor replacement for a person and not even a very reliable replacement for that matter, because there are some things that machines can't do.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So often, you know, you won't have, you'll never have the same person with you in a hospital all the way through your birth. Your doctor will probably pop in at the end and grab the baby as it comes out. And even as far as the nurses go, they're running around dealing with lots of other women who are having babies at the same time. And then you've got their shift changes to deal with. So this very, very important continuity of care, which has been shown to be it's an evidence-based that women do a lot better in labor when they have continuity of care.
Oh, of course.
It's kind of obvious, really, but it takes, you know, you have to say this. And
that's right, exactly.
Yes, and I'm going to come back to that particular point later on because that's the electric fetal monitoring piece, because I'd like to say more about that later. That's one of the things to focus on a little bit more.
When you bring these things up, they are just so, they make such common sense. They just make such sense. And yet at the same time, you know, when you look at it from the doctor's perspective, they don't take this into consideration. And so they have their own agenda. And I can just I mean, I'm so glad we're doing this because it's just so important to get all this out in the open,
yeah,
to have someone who is knowledgeable in this area discuss it.
Yeah, and you know, also given that we just have this hour together, I'm kind of skating through,
yeah,
some quite big areas here, but just to give you a touch into some of these places,
yeah,
to get the picture.
Right.
Another thing that's happened, which is all part of this environment, is that doctors have created this whole category of birthing women which you do not want to find yourself in, and that's called failure to progress. And this failure to progress has absolutely nothing to do with you or your baby. And I am actually going to come back to that point too, because that's a place I'd like to revisit in this interview if possible.
Sure.
And then, let's see, I mentioned about the U.S. Yeah, oh, you know, I love what Marsden Wagner, who was actually an obstetrician and neonatologist himself, who worked for the World Health Organization as director of Women's and Children's Health for some time in the past, he said, having a highly trained gynecological surgeon attend a normal birth is analogous to having a pediatric surgeon babysit a normal 2-year-old child. He says it would be a waste of the pediatric surgeon's time and skills. And when the young child gets tired and fussy, the surgeon might be tempted inappropriately to use drugs.
Oh my! What an analogy! Oh my! And who is this again?
That's Dr. Marsden Wagner.
Oh my. That puts it all in perspective, doesn't it?
Yes, really it does. Absolutely.
Mm.
So another thing is that as we have more and more primary C-sections being performed in hospitals, secondary C-sections, of course, are going up too, because if you have a C-section the first time and then you're told you have to have a C-section next time you have a baby, then you can see that that's actually going to be putting the C-section rate up steadily as well.
Of course.
And most doctors really discourage vaginal birth after a cesarean. They don't like it, and they'll often even try to scare women out of having something like that. And I would encourage women to really thoroughly research that and make their own decisions about whether they want to.
I've heard of people having a very successful vaginal birth after a C-section, so it's possible.
Yes, and it's eminently possible to do that. So another thing that can go on around C-section is that there can be incorrect diagnoses by doctors about the size of your baby, and that happens quite a lot. It's interesting. Many women are told that their baby's too big for them to get it out.
Mm.
And then so they have to have a C-section, and then after the birth they find that the baby's size was not an issue at all and it was a perfectly normally sized baby.
Mm.
So there's something going on there. The diagnostic tools are not accurate, or they're just too open to interpretations. Or maybe it's just another way of a doctor just saying, hey, I can get this baby out in 20 minutes, so why should I hang around for another few hours?
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yes.
So that's
kind
of sad. So that's really, let's see. Induction, wow, yes, that's a really big one. You know, the rate of babies being induced in hospitals is just going up so much.
Yes.
It's really amazing. And again, I think it simply comes down to doctors' preferences and scheduling. Let's get you in and get you going, you know.
Yes.
And so induction is actually And the increased rates of induction are having a huge impact on the cesarean section rates. And I'm going to talk about that quite a bit later too, because that's really important. So in other words, you're much more likely to end up with a C-section if you have an induction. And that's not, and that's very easy to prevent. You just say, no, I'm not having one.
Right. And that's what it is. It's not understanding the process and when the intervention begins and why. And being able to say no.
Yes. Really, you don't really want to be having any interventions at all unless they're medically indicated.
Yeah.
And most of the time, to be honest with you, they're just not medically indicated. at all.
But it's such a fine line there, because when women are in labor, you know, there's anxiety, the father's, you know, anxious sometimes, they want everything to go right. And so when the medical person comes in and says, you know, speaks in terms of having an intervention, I think the tendency is to think that this is necessary. Mm. And so this knowledge that you're sharing is going to let women know that that is not necessarily a medical necessity.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, Sharon, the interesting thing about obstetricians is that most obstetricians don't even know what a normal birth looks like.
Yes.
They've never even seen a normal birth.
Yes.
The only model that they have is a medicalized model.
Yes.
And they have no idea what a normal birth looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you most of them would be shocked.
Yes.
You know.
I think that's so true. That's just exactly
really
where it's coming from.
Because there's nothing more awesome than a woman in labor and birthing. It really is. It should be the most powerful and empowering experience a woman ever has.
Yeah.
You know, if she has children, it's so sad what's happening, because women so often feel like, you know, they don't feel great after they've had their babies, and they don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
They just know something was missing or something wasn't right.
Right.
You know, and they don't understand that it's because they've really, their bodies are not trusted when they go into hospital, and the doctors are trained to do things to you, and they will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not actually trained to be able to support you to have your baby and to support the natural process. That's not what they're doing in hospital.
It's a totally different model.
Yeah, it's a totally different model. It's not a baby and child-centered model.
Right.
It's a medicalized model. So, it's difficult. And also, you know, as I've been reading up more and more about this myself, again, Marsden Wagner's, having been inside the profession, he writes a lot about how the obstetric practices are not based in scientific evidence. And he says that evidence-based practices actually do reduce the risk of complications to mum and baby. And it shows that mum and baby have much better outcomes. For example, mum and baby have much better outcomes if they have continuity of care during labor. But this is not practiced in hospitals, because it doesn't suit obstetricians, their scheduling or their financial income to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is something that's happening in many areas in obstetrics, and that in itself, you could take up at least a whole program just talking about that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I think we really need to come back and keep revisiting this, because there's so much education that needs to take place to change this this process around and give, you know, the power back to the woman to really be in charge of her birth.
Yeah, that's it, really. For a woman to be in charge of her birth, I think that would be the main desirable outcome, really.
Yes.
And it's so interesting, really, when you look at all of these things that are going on in hospital birthing, and then you wonder, well, why are we feeling safer in hospital? What's that about? Why do we think that this is the safest thing to do? Why do we feel that this is the way to bring our children in?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think there's a huge power over. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, but power over. I think the medical profession has a power over so many people. People just kind of bend to it. And, you know, I haven't been under that since 12 years of age. I said no to a special injection our family doctor wanted to give. And so I don't see that. And I just have a really difficult time with it. But I think so many people are just really, I don't know exactly why. They just do accept that the medical profession knows the way to go.
We do. I've done it myself too. And I realize that a lot of that is about, you know, not really wanting to take responsibility for myself and for my own body. And it's almost as though in our culture we have really been trained to give our power and our authority about our body and our health to our doctor.
So true.
And not to question that.
Exactly. Not to question it. That's the key.
Yeah, not to question it. And also to just feel that this is the right thing to do and that they know better than we do.
Yes.
And you know, it may be that in some real medical situations they actually do, but they don't know. Obstetricians do not know more about birth, normal, natural, healthy birth, than women do and babies do.
Yes.
Babies know what to do and women know what to do.
Right. Yeah. And to have a professional there, a doula or a midwife, you know, knowing and allowing the woman to know and supporting her and just encouraging her and saying this is a normal process. Because
yeah.
I'm sure it can be very scary when, you know, there is the contractions and you don't know if this is really okay or not. I mean, you know, you get to a point where you're thinking, you know, maybe something needs to be done. So just mm-hmm. that reassurance
yeah.
that everything is okay and it is progressing. I know you have been
yeah.
at a birth recently.
Exactly. And that you can do it.
Yes, yes, you can do it.
It's natural. In all the births I've been to, and that hasn't been a lot, but I have seen that there's always seems to be a place the woman gets to in the birthing process where she gets to that where she feels like she can't do it and she can't
yes.
get through it. And what I've seen is that with extra support from her doula or her midwife, she does get through it.
Yes, yes.
And that's what she needs. She needs the support.
Exactly.
She needs somebody to say, how about if we try this position, and how about if I massage you here, and would you like a cold pack, and
yes.
how about getting in the shower, and why don't you lean on me, you know, or whatever that is.
Yes. Exactly.
Whereas, you know, in hospital, you're laying on your back with your legs up and they're really, you know, left to your own devices a lot of the time. So I think what you said about doulas is that's really something that I would just really advocate for very strongly if you're going to have your baby in hospital, is that you get a really good doula,
yes.
somebody that already has really good connections and relationships with the people in the labor and delivery ward of the hospital that you've chosen to have your baby in. Because evidence has shown in studies that even having a woman just sitting in the room through the
yes,
whole process, which
mm-hmm.
is that continuity piece again, actually drastically lowers the level of medical interventions that happen. That's before she even does anything.
Mm.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So, the other good thing about a doula is that she will help you to make a birth plan, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that later too.
Mm.
Because that's a really important thing to have.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
I just want to let people know, too, if they're really interested in knowing more about this, Karen's website again is www.healyourearlyimprints.com. That's healyourearlyimprints.com, and you can
yeah.
contact her through that page. And
yeah.
then also we have a Ning site, which is like a social network, and it's called thevoiceofchange.ning.com. That's N-I-N-G.com. And because of Karen's programming in here, and we also had Dr. Jeannie Ohm on a while back, we have a lot of people coming to the Ning site, the Voice of Change, who are interested in natural birthing and are part of that process. So come to these two websites, and you know, you can really stay in touch with what is happening and get in touch with more people and the information.
Right.
I'm just so glad that you're doing this.
Thank you.
Just such important work.
Well, you know, I do also offer a half-hour free telephone consult for anybody that may be listening that would like to ask me some specific questions.
Oh, wonderful.
Run something by me. And my phone number for that is 707-829-1764.
Excellent. Again, 707-829-1764.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So, you know, there are quite a few factors that contribute to C-section, and there are, as you can see, some of them, you know, there isn't anything you can do about them, really. But there are many that you can do something about.
And yes, and that's what we want to address.
Yeah, I'd like to focus a little bit more on that. And one of the things that happens is that when you go into hospital, the earlier that you go into hospital for your birthing, excuse me, the more likely you are to end up with a C-section. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because the longer you're there when you're in labor, the more interventions you will have.
Yes.
And the more interventions you have, the more likely you are to have a cesarean section.
Okay. That makes sense. And then also, if you're there for a long time, people are going to say, perhaps, that doctors, that you're not progressing, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, as I said earlier, induction is on the rise. And again, it's only being offered as a scheduling preference for the doctor. And sometimes they'll present it to you as, oh, wouldn't you like to just know which day you're going to have your baby, you know?
Yes.
And
yes.
Actually, I would say to anyone who's listening to this, do not have an induction.
Yes.
It's so not a good idea on many levels. One is that it's usually your baby that will begin the labor when they're ready. Babies know when they're ready.
Yes.
And they know when they're cooked enough and they're ready to come out. And that's a really important piece of our imprinting that we get starting our own birth. It gives us that imprint of knowing what it feels like to have an impulse to start something and then follow it through all the way to completion.
Yes.
So often with induced babies and children and people, they really have a problem with that initial impulse place in themselves. So it's very important just on that, from that point of view, but also from the point of view of birthing in hospital. If you actually, you're in hospital before you've even gone into labor, and then you're having an induction, which means that the beginning of your labor is actually starting straight away with a fairly major intervention, you're actually, you know, on the slippery slope right away.
Yes, yes,
the beginning.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And usually induction means that they're going to give you an IV, which will restrict your movement, and they're going to give you a drug called Pitocin through the IV, which is a synthetic oxytocin, and it's a strange drug. It actually tends to get it does speed things up, and it makes things go unnaturally fast.
Mm.
And it can actually increase the pain of your contractions as well.
Mm-hmm.
When they use Pitocin. So the next thing that can happen is that because your pain has got stronger using this drug, they will then offer you another drug to take that away.
Oh, yes.
And so straight away, you can see how there's a cascade effect that starts to happen as soon
right.
as you get there.
Right.
So
one thing leads to another.
Yeah. So really avoid induction if it's not medically indicated. Just avoid that at all costs. And I would even say stay away from the hospital for as long as you can in your labor. And don't really, you know, don't go in there until you're you know, pretty well into it. I'm not saying go rushing in at the last minute when your baby's
yes.
coming out, by any means.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But to have some way, you know, get to know what the contractions mean and how far apart they are and when it's safe, you know, for you to stay. It's actually safe for you to stay at home for quite a long time.
Yes, yes. And especially if you have the support of a doula or a midwife,
sure.
you know, those people are going to tell you and you're going to be in contact with them.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a doula, they can come over to your house and stay with you until you're ready to go to the hospital.
Exactly.
And that way, that's a really wonderful way of, I think, of just cutting out a lot of these problems with the interventions, laying around in the hospital with the doctor wondering, well, you know, what can I do to her next
yes.
to get her out in
yeah.
and out of here, you know?
Exactly, to get her in and out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so definitely no inductions.
Yes, and then you mentioned about a birth plan, too. That sounds like such a wonderful idea.
Oh, yeah, that's a really great idea. I'd like to talk about that a little bit later, if that's okay.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that's going on in hospitals, which is very common and routinely used, in fact, in, I think, 95% of hospital births, electric fetal monitors are used.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, again, I would say just refuse to have one completely, because it's another intervention which leads to a whole cascade of other interventions. And the other thing about the electric fetal monitor is that they really limit your freedom of movement. And laying down on your back, not moving around when you're in labor, is absolutely the worst thing that you can be doing.
Yes.
Laying on your back trying to give birth is the worst position that you could be in. It actually makes it harder for the baby to come through the pelvis when you're laying on your back with your legs in the air.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so
mm-hmm.
convenient for the doctor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes,
to do it that
exactly,
way. Exactly, right?
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
Why, Karen, are they asking or why are they putting the electric fetal monitor on women in labor, just on a general basis?
Well, if you think about it, I don't know if you've been to a labor and delivery ward, but you've got a number of women all in labor at the same time. The doctor usually isn't even in the hospital. He's probably in his office seeing lots of patients,
mm-hmm.
and the nurse will be calling him and saying, so-and-so is doing this right now, what do you want me to do? Oh, give her some Pitocin or do whatever, you know. He's giving instructions on the phone.
As a result of the fetal monitor.
Pardon?
As a result of looking at having someone.
Well, partly,
but
what's happening here is that this goes back to the continuity of care issue, doesn't it? Because there really isn't anybody with the woman.
Yes.
So
yes.
They have these machines, and they hook you up to the machine, and then they have like a monitor down in the main desk, and they can just look at all the different machines and see what's going on with all the different women that they have. It's kind of a bit like a conveyor belt, really.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
You just bring so many things to light when you talk about this. It's just, it makes perfect sense of the way that they are doing their business.
Yeah, it's business. It's, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, again, research shows that routine electric fetal monitor screening is does not improve outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
It shows no improvement in outcomes at all. And neither does, just having an EFM when you go into the hospital, just as if you just decided to go in and just have one so they could see where you were with that, that has no improvement on outcomes.
Have what with that?
Sometimes they'll do a routine screening with the electric fetal monitor when you enter into the hospital.
I see.
And
uh-huh.
that doesn't improve your outcomes either.
I see. Mm-hmm.
So when you go into hospital, one of the things you can do is just say that you could just decide to have, if you needed to have it, to have intermittent use of an EFM, especially if you're not going to have a nurse or a midwife or a doctor, which you probably won't present at your birth throughout. It's probably not a bad idea just to have that intermittent use of an EFM, but definitely don't just have an EFM on you the whole time you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's useless, and also it's going to make it really difficult for you to move around freely and walk around and change positions and do what you need to be doing as a laboring woman.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, you know, as with all of these interventions, there are sometimes they are medically indicated and they
exactly.
are needed for good reasons. For example, with an electric fetal monitor, you may need to have one all the time if you have a breech baby or if you're being induced, so there's another reason not to be induced, or if you're being even just augmented with drugs, which means you're already in labor but they decided to give you some drugs because it's not going fast enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if your baby's heart rate is slow or fast, those are some of the good reasons to have electric fetal monitoring, but otherwise just don't have it. It's been proven to contribute to the high rate of C-sections because it's inaccurate, and also because it's very open. The results that come out on that little piece of tape are very open to interpretation by whoever's looking.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, by whoever's looking at them.
Right.
So that's a good one to avoid. And then, epidurals. Epidurals are so common now in hospital. It's just become like a normal thing. And I've seen a woman having an epidural in hospital, and it just made me, it was really seeing something put into somebody's spine in that delicate area of the body was very scary to me.
Yes.
To see that happening. But they're very popular, and a lot of women have them, and they are offered. And the interesting thing about the epidural, though, is that it actually slows down your labor. apart from other side effects that it has, which are not good, but it actually slows down labor. So if you have an epidural, again, you are likely, quite likely, to then be given more drugs to speed your labor up again.
You get into that cycle.
Yeah, and then so there you're heading down that road again towards. And can you see just how much interruptions there are happening here?
Yes.
To a process which actually, if just left alone, would happen perfectly well and perfectly normally.
Certainly.
On its own, most of the time. It's extraordinary, really, how much intervention is happening. And then with the epidural, of course, you're quite numb, and so you're unable to feel your baby, you can't feel your body, and you can't feel your pushing urges, especially now they've got you on your back too, so you're on the back, which makes it even harder for your baby to get out, and then that means that if you don't end up with a C-section, you're very likely to end up with your baby being pulled out with forceps or vacuum extraction, so in come some more interventions, which can be traumatic for baby. Because you can't push them out effectively when you can't feel your body. So that's another tricky piece to really think about. You know, don't just go into hospital and just accept this long line of interventions, because you don't have to, and they're not necessarily good for you. And if you have a really good doula that can support you the way that you need to be supported, you shouldn't really need any of these things.
Yes, and I think it's so important to have someone with you that can be objective. I know when I had surgery once, there was a conversation about doing something else because of an injury. And I took somebody with me in the morning because I knew I was going to be nervous for them to support me in talking to the doctor once again and reminding him just before the surgery that they were not to do this other rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that support is just so important. I can see this, there is just so much that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
That knowledge ahead of time is very important. And
then
having someone there to support you during this is just tremendous.
That's really huge. And I think also really thinking about it and really doing your research, and that's something that you can do when you're making your birthing plan. And if you have a good doula, that she will help you to make a really great birthing plan, which will help you to really think about each one of these things. And don't stop at that. Actually, you know, just really get educated so that you can take control of your own birth, because really that's where the control should be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to do that preparation. And I would suggest that people actually ask their obstetrician, what's your cesarean section rate? And what's your induction rate?
Yes.
Yeah, and good luck getting a straight answer on
that. Right.
But really, you know, ask them what it is and go through your birth plan with them and really listen and get a sense for yourself. Is this person really, really going to get behind me and the birth that I want for myself and my baby? And make an assessment of that. And if they're not backing you up and you don't feel supported by them and their C-section rates are too high or whatever the reason is, find somebody else. You actually do have a choice.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You don't have to take somebody that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I highly recommend Marsden Wagner's book, Creating Your Birth Plan, as a really good guide to making a birth plan.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, Creating Your Birth Plan. It's really, he talks a lot about all of these issues, and it's really a great educational book which will help you to make a great birth plan. And he says ask your physician lots of questions until you're satisfied that you have the right person, because this is such an important event.
Yeah.
And you want to feel supported.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's Wagner, Wagner, and the first name is Marsden.
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 Yes, Dr. Marsden Wagner. Actually, I've been reading another book of his, which I love, and it's called Born in the USA. That really is such a great book. The fantastic thing about him is that he actually was one of these doctors. He was an obstetrician. He was on the inside of all of this. He did the training. He did the work. And he saw what went on inside, and he is just so knowledgeable about that. And it's just fantastic to hear this straight talking obstetrician, you know, telling it like it is. And
oh, that's so important, especially from a doctor who's been there and has done it and been in the practice.
Yeah, I just love his books. So, yeah, one of the things that he says, which I think is great too, is always ask for a second opinion. So if your obstetrician comes to you and says, I think it's time for us to do a C-section, you can just respectfully tell them that you think two heads are better than one, and that this is not a vote of no confidence, but you're facing a huge decision about your body and your baby.
Yes.
And you would like to have a second opinion.
Yes.
And you would like it to not be a doctor that's in his circle.
Yes.
Because they will just agree with each other, whether they think differently.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right, right. And having all this discussed ahead of time, so it's in the birth plan, so the doctor is aware of this, would just be so important to making this all work.
Yes, indeed. There's a whole, in the Marsden Wagner's Creating a Birth Plan book, he has a whole list of questions you should ask your doctor if he suggests an intervention, like, why do you want to do that? Will it improve my outcomes? Is there an alternative? You know, he has this whole list of questions that you...
Beautiful.
And it really makes a lot of sense that we should be stopping at every point here in these things and not just receiving them and saying, oh, this is just normal. It's normal for me to have all these really heavy drugs. It's normal for me to let these people do these things to me. It's normal for me not to be in charge of my own birth. It's not normal. There's nothing normal about it.
Right.
It's been normalized by the medical profession, but it's really not normal at all.
That's a beautiful differentiation there.
Yeah.
It's been normalized by the medical profession, but it is not normal.
No, it really is not normal.
Mm.
No.
Very important distinction.
Yes. Yes.
My. Well, we have about 5 minutes left, Karen, if you want to kind of sum up anything, or if there's something that you want to, you know, further information to share.
Yes. I would just say that preparation is really important for birthing, but what I've noticed in my work is when people really do the preparation, it really makes an enormous difference to the outcomes of their birth.
Oh, I can imagine.
So really think about, what will it take for me to be ready? And that's a really great question to ask yourselves, you and your partner, when you're, you know, a good few months before you get to the birth, so that you've got some time to really look at that and see what that means to you. And, you know, that can work on all kinds of levels, the practical preparation, some of the things we've been talking about, finding the right doula, having a birth plan, thinking about all of these things that are going to happen in the hospital, and deciding who your caregivers are going to be. That's the practical side of preparation. But another side of preparation can be looking at how you came into life, your own journey into life, because that can have a really big effect on how you bring your baby in. So, you know, take a really good look at that and see what happened to you, and see if there's anything that you need to know about that that will help you with your own birthing. And then, you know, many times, for example, women who've been sexually abused can find that coming up during their birthing. And so it's really important to really have an inquiry into yourself, which is along the lines of, what do I need to know to have the birth that I want?
Beautiful question.
Yeah. And so, the only other thing I'd like to say is that I am actually writing a booklet on the subject of how to avoid a cesarean section in your hospital birth. So, if anybody's listening and they're interested in hearing about that booklet when it's ready to be finished and ready to be distributed, please contact me and I'll put you on my list.
Excellent.
Yeah, and the only other thing I wanted to mention is that I actually have a womb process workshop happening in June 11th to the 13th. I don't actually have that up on my website, that date, yet, but there is a page on my website about womb process workshops, and those are just really small, intimate groups where people can come and do some process work on their early imprints You can connect with me about that either through my website or calling me on 707-829-1764.
Excellent. And again, the website is healyourearlyimprints.com.
That's right. And there actually are some articles on my article blog at that website on cesarean section too, if you want to do a little bit more reading.
You have a wonderful website.
Thank you.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much. And again, also the earlier programs that we did are on your website too. So
yes, there's part one and part two of Prepare for Your Baby Before Conception, which is there. And there's also, I was on a panel at the Association for Prenatal and Perinatal Psychology and Health Conference in April 2009, and that actually, the recording of that is on there too. So
excellent.
That's fun.
Excellent. And your articles are excellent too. So you have a wonderful resource in your website.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Karen. I'm just so grateful for your work and look forward to doing another program with you in the future.
Thank you, Sharon.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Good night now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, such a delightful to be with Karen Melton. Again, she's at healyourearlyimprints.com. Want to let you know about our programs coming up next week. It's Peter Klein and Getting Ready for the Coming Renaissance. And he is a fascinating individual. He owned his own school for many years and worked with teenagers for 36 years. And his main interest right now is raising the intelligence of the human species globally. And he's currently working on a digital reading program that should enable people to read, who can't read at all, to learn to read at the college level in less than a year. And during the radio show, he's going to be addressing the economic transformation of the world caused by the elimination of low-skilled jobs and the need for very highly intelligent workers. So that is next week on The Voice of Change. The first week of March, it is my delight to have back Jeffrey John, and he is going to be sharing his new music, CD songs of that will be on his new CD this year, and those are for children. So that is going to be the first week of March. Jeffrey John is a ritual leader and also a naturalist. He does campfires and for all ages, and he also works in the outdoor education program. And he's a wonderful guitarist, and he'll be sharing his songs the first week of March. And then on March 16th, I have an author coming to me to be on the program. I'm very excited about her. It's Janine Fox, and she is the author of Feeding Penny Pig. Janine is a certified financial planner, and she tells the tale of a little girl named Lenny and her beloved piggy bank. And actually, it's Lainey, I believe. Lainey falls in love with Penny Pig and learns to do chores so that she can earn money to feed her little best friend. And the story aims to teach children lessons of financial responsibility that will help them avoid common pitfalls later in life. So that's going to be Janine Fox the week of March 16th. And then I have in April Mark Alden Johnston. He is another author, and his new children's book is I'm Up in a Tree. And he is an author and also father of three. He introduces readers to a little boy who is stuck in a tree. I just love this story. The boy, unsure of what to do, must rely on his own judgment to figure out how to get back to the ground, despite the temptation to listen to the misguided information and advice of others. So with this story, Johnson hopes to encourage children to resist peer pressure and make good choices at a young age. So I'm very excited about these authors because I think their stories are just wonderful. Then actually on the next, this Saturday on the 20th at 5 p.m., I am going to be doing a special, The Voice of Change, Healing Our Planet. And we're going to be talking about children and what they are doing to save the planet. I work with numerous children, and it's just so endearing to say, you know, the things that they want to do to help the planet. So that's going to be on the 20th, this Friday, Saturday. And we welcome you to call in if you are a teacher or a parent, anyone working with children or children yourself, to call in to be on the program. And you can email me at newways, it's neways at pon.net, or contact me through the Blog Talk Radio site. Thank you for listening, and again, it's always a pleasure. Thevoiceofchange.ning.com if you want to know more about our guests. Have a wonderful week.